Well, Facebook and other big social media platforms get a lot of bad press these days for the antisocial antics of some of their users, the spread of misinformation, and the effect that can have on our public life. But a recent headline in the technology and culture magazine Wired caught our eye: Facebook groups are destroying America. It's a pretty big call, and it came from Nina Jankiewicz, who is a fellow at the Wilson Center in Washington, D.C., and she specializes in studying disinformation and politics. But what is it that's so toxic about Facebook groups specifically, and if they really are destroying America, as she says, could they be destroying New Zealand too?
After the Cambridge Analytica scandal in 2018 and also the revelations related to Russian interference in the United States election in 2016, Facebook kind of adjusted its strategy a little bit, and it communicated to users that it was going to be prioritizing their privacy, prioritizing friends and family. It called this their pivot privacy, right? So people had this false sense of security about what was going on Facebook. Groups are a big part of this strategy. During our Super Bowl in January, which seems like a million years ago now, Facebook ran an ad that said, you can find your tribe in these groups, anything you do, you can be a rock climber, you can be a rock musician, yada, yada, yada. The tagline was ready to rock. And Facebook is driving notifications in these groups. And I'm sure people are finding lots of great community there. But there is also some really salacious, divisive, quite indoctrinating and extremist messaging being spread in groups. And because they're segregated by interest, by location, they're really easy targets for bad actors, whether those are foreign actors or domestic disinformers, to spread their divisive messaging. And Facebook's actually incentivizing that. Not only do they prioritize groups as part of their notifications, prioritize the content that users get from groups, but they're actually suggesting that people join similar groups. Once you join one group, you get notifications and suggestions to join other similar, either extremist or indoctrinating groups. So it's kind of this self-fulfilling cycle. And unfortunately, there is a lot of nasty content on there.
Yeah, I remember, Nina, how upset people got and alarmed when that happened, that tweak of the algorithm that prioritized the content from friends and family and effectively downgraded the amount of stuff from recognized news media that was turning up in individuals' Facebook news feeds. Do you regard that as significant, the fact that suddenly the stuff that you'd think you could rely on, bona fide news media content, was suddenly a smaller amount of what people were getting in those feeds?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think Facebook was responding to user pressure in some ways, but it was also keeping its business interests apart. You know, people are engaging more with the divisive emotional content that they might get from friends and family. They're engaging with that more than they're engaging with content from the mainstream news outlets or politicians, for instance, that might be in their feeds. And I think that's a real mistake on Facebook's part. I would like to see them prioritizing quality information over the stuff that is memes and kind of hate speech, all of this stuff that we're seeing bubbling up through these groups. Of course, that means that Facebook would need to make a determination about what's quality content and what's not, but it's already doing that de facto through its algorithms rather than quality content. However, it's serving you whatever content is going to keep your eyeballs looking at the ads on the platform for longer amounts of time, keeping you engaging with that platform. And that's all it has at heart right now. I don't see any real commitment to solving the democratic problem that is Facebook. Instead, they are very, very focused on their bottom line, and the rest is just window dressing. They've made some small adjustments to how they address electoral interference, how ads, the degree to which they're transparent. But unfortunately, when Facebook's own algorithm is driving people into extremist hate speech, abusive content, you know, we've got a problem that's much bigger than where an ad came from.
But surely, Nina, even if these are groups of, you know, like-minded individuals, and we're getting that kind of restricted thought bubble echo chamber thing going on, doesn't the fact that it is a group mean there is the opportunity for the wisdom of the crowd to then take over, particularly if these are big groups, which are the ones that you think would be influential in spreading the sort of disinformation you're worried about?
You know, you would think that, but unfortunately, not all of the groups are public, which is another problem that me and my co-author, Cindy Otis, honed in on. A lot of them are not only private, some of them are secret, so you need to be invited to join them, which means that they have a little bit less oversight than a public group might, and they tend to attract those similar like-minded people. So I've been doing some research recently into the reopen movement here in the United States, and of course, many of our states are open now, but there are plenty of groups that popped up during our coronavirus lockdown that were all about reopening. And there were people who had many different political beliefs in there, but they were united by this desire to reopen. Sometimes they joined those groups out of an economic interest. But what I found when I was looking into this was that from that economic interest in reopening, you might then be redirected to a group that was anti-vaccination, or that didn't believe in wearing masks or social distancing and saw all of the restrictions that our fellow Americans are dealing with right now in order to keep each other safe as some sort of huge government control mechanism. And the next thing they believe will happen is that we'll all be vaccinated and microchips will be implanted in us so that we can be tracked. And they think Bill Gates is behind that. From an economic interest in reopening, you get to tracking devices implanted in vaccines. And it's not very many degrees of separation away, I'm sorry to say. There's also a problem that Facebook is fact-checking some of the content through its third-party fact-checking network, but when that label is applied to these posts, people then tend to, it kind of has the opposite effect in some of these communities, right? Because they don't trust Facebook. They think Facebook is the deep state. And any fact check that Facebook applies to that content will just make them believe it more because they think it's trying to censor them from the truth.
But where you refer, Nina, to bad actors who are exploiting these groups and trying to seed disinformation or information they want people to believe, I mean, surely when people join groups, when the information is being shared within them, they're still going to place trust on the people they know, the members of the groups they're familiar with, or personal contacts and friends, so people they really do trust. If the stuff is being seeded by people they basically don't know popping up in a group, doesn't that mean they're less inclined to believe it?
So I think when you're first joining a group, that might be the inclination that people have. But over time, these communities become very close-knit. They might have several hundred posts a day. A lot of them have key active members who become trusted in that community. It's a bit like the cafeteria at work. These are people that the users are seeking out on a daily basis. They choose to be part of that community. There is trust involved. And that's exactly what makes them so exploitable, because there is that inherent trust and community in these groups. And the same sort of thing happened in the 2016 election, although it was via pages and not groups, because groups were not as important in the Facebook algorithm at that time. Essentially, the Russian Internet Research Agency didn't share a lot of quote-unquote fake news at the very beginning through the inauthentic pages that they created, whether those were pages in support of, you know, patriotism in America, or whether they were pages in support of, for instance, the Black Lives Matter movement. They shared positive content. So they would share information about Black history, for instance, or my personal favorite was in the Being Patriotic Facebook group, which was one of the most popular ones, or sorry, Facebook page, not group. And they shared a picture of a golden retriever who had a red and white star bandana tied around his neck, and he was holding a flag. They photoshopped him with an American flag, and the picture said, "Like if you think it's going to be a great week." Now, that's not fake news. That's just kind of fun content. In fact, if I saw that cross my Facebook feed, I might actually, you know, engage with that content, because I love dogs. Who doesn't? But it's inauthentic content. And what that does is build trust with the community on that page, or, you know, in this case, we're talking about groups. It's the same sort of idea. And over time, those asks get bigger and bigger. So it starts as, you know, harmless memes. But a couple of months later, the group or page moderators might ask people to change their profile picture in support of a political cause. And from there, they might ask them to sign a petition, to make a donation. And even, we know, the IRA was able to create real-life protests on the ground here in the United States, not only in the lead up to the 2016 election, but after. These were going on through 2018, as far as we know. And that's a really scary thing. And that's the exact sort of dynamic that groups are made to essentially exploit. They're made to create that engagement, to keep people on the platform, to keep them, you know, feeling like they're part of something. Zuckerberg calls it the digital living room. But in reality, I would say it's more like a digital basement. It's a covert, you know, really kind of shady vector for a lot of political movements, including, you know, white nationalists and other things that we would prefer not have a platform on, you know, our digital public square.
Nina, we know that advertisers and individuals and publishers can boost posts. You know, they pay Facebook to do it, or even other platforms, this exists as well, and get their content in front of more eyeballs. But can groups be boosted in the same way? So artificially, once they're created, they have some momentum, and bad actors or people who want to persuade individuals of some cause or other and get information in front of them, can they then game the system by spending a bit of money in order to effectively boost the membership just by paying for it?
You can't buy group membership. You can advertise a group, and I think you can advertise posts in groups, if I'm not mistaken. But the most compelling content isn't the content that people pay for. It's the content that goes viral organically. And these groups are essentially viral content factories, because they are prioritized so highly in Facebook's algorithm. You'll get notifications when your group is active, and it'll say, okay, so-and-so posted a new photo in the group. You go and look at it. It's already got, you know, 70 comments, and people are discussing what it means. They're liking it. They're sharing it. They're sharing it outside of the group, which then amplifies it further. This is exactly the sort of dynamic that just allows something to really be amplified in a viral way. And you don't need to spend a single penny to do that. But really what we need to be doing, and this is what my co-author and I argue for in the piece, is providing people with more transparency, more information to navigate the flow of content that they're seeing. Why are they being targeted with a specific suggestion for this group? Why are they seeing certain content above other content? Why do they see, you know, that cute dog over a post from their politician that they wanted to receive updates from? I think people need a lot more control over what they're seeing. And, you know, they don't realize that Facebook is actually making these decisions for them, usually just with economics in mind.
Well, Nina, you've suggested that any group that has a membership of more than 5,000 should be automatically set to public. So we can't see, otherwise we will be able to see these interactions, which right now can go on in secret if a group isn't set public. But what about if you have an issue like pro-choice, pro-life debates or groups that might be discussing that, or something like assisted dying, which, for example, we have a referendum on, which will be allied to our general election, which is being held later this year. So that is a current issue of controversy. If you open up groups like that to public membership, I mean, doesn't that mean then they could be swamped and targeted by people that really do want to swing the debate on those issues?
There is much more likelihood that there would be perhaps not a robust debate, but at least there would be room for oversight and room for discussion, which right now in these underground sort of groups, there is not. The other thing that I think is important to point out, it's not that I don't want people to have privacy. It's that Facebook really isn't doing its due diligence in monitoring the content in closed and private groups. And they claim, you know, they want people to have their privacy. But is a group really private when it has tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of members? No, that those people are, you know, congregating in that space for a specific reason. And sometimes those reasons are good. But Facebook right now applies, you know, blanket okays over all of these groups. And I would like to see a little bit more human content moderation over all of them.
Facebook here has said they will not allow ads to be purchased that reference our political parties or our issues from overseas. And also they're obliging our political parties to sign up to a transparency tool, which means the public can see how much they've spent, who the digital ads are targeting. So are these transparency measures, you think, that are good and will actually safeguard us from a few bad actors who might want to exploit the platform to influence the outcome of our election?
Well, I think they're a start. I mean, I think it's a great first step that you don't have those political issue ads in New Zealand. We, you may be aware, have an issue with politicians lying in political ads and Facebook calling that freedom of speech, which the same rules would not apply to content that was aired, for instance, on the radio or on television or certainly in print. You're not allowed to lie in political ads in those fora. And certainly, I believe the same standards should apply to our online political advertising as well. Related to the transparency tool, I think this is a step in the right direction. My experience with these tools is that they are not fully functional yet. And there are loopholes in all of these regulations. Of course, the transparency feature allows us to figure out what those loopholes are. I would hope that Facebook, as a multi-billion dollar company, would kind of foresee these problems rather than, again, relying on researchers and journalists to point them out.
Nina, thank you so much for your time on Sunday morning. It's been fascinating talking to you, and I'm sure that we'll actually hear a bit more from you because I know you have a book coming out shortly, How to Lose the Information War. And in fact, on your own, one of your social media feeds, I see you've pulled out a quote from that. Any government that claims to fight disinformation originating outside its borders cannot do so while it embraces the same methods within them. And I think that's a principle I think we could all agree with when we've got elections coming up in both our countries.
Yeah, absolutely. I wish more American politicians would adhere to that axiom.